Howdy, I'm Joseph Jerome, and in this episode of What's Joe Know, I speak with constitutional law scholar Sanford Levinson. Our Constitution turns 226 years old this year, and as much as Constitution Day on September 17th provides a chance to admire our system of governance, Constitution Day also, I think, presents an ironic opportunity to critique our founding document. Sanford Levinson has long been a harsh critic of the Constitution, calling it imbecilic. I had the opportunity to sit and talk with him last year after his book, Framed, America's 51 Constitutions and the Crisis of Governance, was released. So, Professor Levinson, thank you for joining me.
Oh, I'm delighted.
So, your main thesis, as I understand it, is that the governing structures provided for by the Constitution are to blame for what is increasingly our dysfunctional national government. So, first off, what's wrong with the Constitution?
I'll answer that in one moment. Let me say, I do think the Constitution is to blame, but only in the sense that it makes its own contribution to our present discontents, that one could well believe that if things were going swimmingly in the economy, in the world in general, and the like, that what I see as defects in the Constitution just wouldn't be that important. It would be, perhaps like, at worst, like having the sniffles, but, you just take an aspirin and everything is fine. Rather, my argument is that given that we are faced by a series of really significant challenges,
okay,
then the Constitution, in fact, does make its strongly negative contribution to making it more difficult to face the challenges. So, what is wrong with the Constitution? The main answer is that it establishes what I think are an excess of veto points that make it nearly impossible for legislation or public policy to be passed and implemented in a way sufficient to meet the challenges of the day. From one perspective, the constitutional system makes it very difficult to pass any legislation at all. The bicameral system, meaning that legislation has to get the dotted I and crossed T approval in identical ways in both houses, and as well be signed by the president, and one may as well throw in the possibility of passing muster in the Supreme Court. If you ask yourself, well, even if legislation can be passed, is it good enough to meet the problems that we face, it's even worse. Thus, to take the Affordable Care Act as an example, I was overjoyed when the bill passed. I was delighted when the Supreme Court upheld the mandate.
All right.
But I know of very, very few people who believe that the bill was truly adequate. And that's only one example. You can think, anybody listening to us will think of his or her own example.
I can certainly agree with that, but I guess I would just sort of push back. So, I mean, the generic defense, if I remember back to my sort of constitutional and political history classes, is that the whole idea behind the Constitution was that it was designed to ensure that the government moved slowly and moved inefficiently and...
Oh, I think that's right. I think that's right. That if you look at the debate, many of the debates in Philadelphia, and then the justifications for the Constitution, including those set out in the Federalist, you discover that there was, first of all, a great deal of suspicion of what we might today call democracy, and a great deal of fear that what James Madison in particular called factions would capture control of government for the worst. So you could, in fact, describe the 1787 system as one designed to make it very, very difficult for factions to capture control of the government, and the best way to do this, they thought, was to set up these multiple vetoes. I think that one of the problems, though, is that that gives a huge advantage to the status quo. And unless you're quite satisfied with the status quo and are willing to say, well, you know, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, et cetera. But if you start believing, well, you know, things are really significantly broken and need fixing, and you come to believe that the devil you know is really quite problematic indeed, then you find yourself stifled by the ability to change. The most important changes in most important constitutional changes in our history came as the result of a war that killed 750,000 people. But by and large, we do have a political system that makes it very, very difficult to move from the status quo. I should say the last time we had significant movement was the two golden years of Lyndon Johnson's presidency, where you had the Democrats strongly in control of Congress and the most gifted legislative president in the entire history of the country.
Well, I mean, could I just say that maybe the crisis of governance we face today just hasn't hit a tipping point? I mean, it seems like, you know, the Constitution, or at least our political bodies, seem to respond if there's a crisis or a catastrophic crisis.
Well, you know, in a sense, I hope you're right, because if it's not equipped to respond even to a catastrophic crisis, then we're all doomed. But there is something, I think, questionable about a political system where you say, well, look, it's true that it's not structured to allow us to respond effectively to the needs of the moment or even to crises. But if it really is the kind of crisis in which we think we're faced with catastrophe, then maybe something can be done. I hope you're right, but it seems to me that that really is damning with faint praise.
Fair enough. I guess that sort of leads me to another question. Since you wrote your op-ed in the New York Times about the imbecilic Constitution, you got some criticism from conservative legal scholars, and Professor Richard Epstein, for example. He suggested that the problem is the product of our conscious deviations from the original constitutional plan, end quote, and basically the erosion of a limited system of government. So, I mean, I guess how would you respond? Do you think that modern times sort of just require a more elaborate government?
Before I return to that, let me just say one quick thing about the title of the op-ed, that is Our Imbecilic Constitution.
Okay.
I'm not unhappy with the title. it's the title that the Times gave because the first paragraph of my piece quoted Alexander Hamilton in the 15th Federalist Paper, where he referred to the imbecilic government that the United States was operating under in 1787, that is, under the Articles of Confederation. And one of the things that I really am trying to get across is that in 1787, there was this widespread view that we weren't being well served by the Articles of Confederation.
True.
And to put it mildly, there was a national conversation about, first of all, whether that was true, and secondly, what might be done to fix it. What really depresses me about the present is that, frankly, there is no national conversation. If you look at pundits or mainstream political leaders, that even addresses the possibility that the Constitution might play its own role in contributing to the fix we're in. Now, to answer your question with regard to Richard Epstein, the fact is, I think he's right, that if your view of government is that it should do almost nothing, the so-called night watchman state, which is Epstein's view, then you could very well say that the Constitution is well-designed to maintain a night watchman government, and that the real problem is that American political culture has rejected the night watchman vision, the most important rejection, of course, being the New Deal. Now, if we were at the Cato Institute, made up of very, very bright and talented libertarians, and Epstein is certainly one of their heroes, then I think that this is exactly the kind of right critique of my position. If, on the other hand, you do identify yourself as a political liberal, a political progressive, somebody who actually admires the New Deal and who admires the Great Society, and for that matter, you know, to be heretical for a moment, admires the domestic achievements of Richard Nixon, who brought us the Environmental Protection Agency and, you know, a whole bunch of programs that contemporary liberals are more than happy to embrace, then you would say that the Cato Institute Epstein vision is not adequate.
All right, so assuming we're not going to be rolling the social safety net back to nothing, take our current constitution. Do you think it can be sort of repaired, or what specifically would you do to sort of fix our current constitutional document?
Well, there are a number of different answers. My most ambitious response...
All right, that's what we want to hear.
...is to have a new constitutional convention, which I would say I am fairly certain that almost all of the framing generation would have been astonished, and some of them would have been appalled, that we've gone 225 years without a second convention. One of the things that I do in my book is to contrast the national constitutional story with the story that you see if you look at state constitutions and their history, and you discover that there have been about 225 state constitutional conventions. Each state has had an average of just short of three constitutions. So if you look at the American states, the so-called little laboratories of experimentation, mm-hmm. you discover that from very near the beginning, they were always willing to scrutinize the political system they were operating under and to engage in what they thought were reforms. Some of them we might look back on and say, you know, they weren't so great. But what I really want to emphasize is that they were really willing to ask the basic question, how well are we being served? Now, with regard to the U.S. Constitution, more than anything else, I really want to encourage that conversation.
All right. Well, to start off the conversation, where exactly is the U.S. Constitution not serving us oh so good these days?
I think the United States Senate is an absurd institution, given its deviation from any 21st century notion of one person, one vote. The power possessed by small states, and in fact, I'm fond of defining the United States Senate as nothing more than an affirmative action program of a very generous kind for the residents of small states. If today we're grateful that they can block legislation passed by the current House of Representatives, we should be aware that it is the Senate that contributed to our having an inadequate Affordable Care Act. So that is certainly one thing that I would want to change if I could.
I think there's probably a lot of people that agree that the Senate is dysfunctional. I guess I would just sort of wonder, do you really think we could improve things if we had a second go at it? I mean, I look at something like, again, looking at state constitutions, California, where citizens are incredibly active in their constitutional government, and you have a state that is, I mean, arguably dysfunctional. If we were to try it to write a constitution again, the original constitution was written by a small group of founding fathers who were locked away in a room. In a country of what, 310 million people, if we had another go at it, wouldn't we just create a document that was even more unruly?
Well, I think that's a very, very serious question. I think that underlying the question is an even more serious one, which is whether we have any remaining faith in democracy. Because really what you're asking is whether in a heterogeneous, very, very large country, we could possibly expect a genuine national conversation, or whether you think that this is simply hopeless. You know, it may be that Montesquieu and some of the anti-federalists were correct, that you simply can't have a functioning Republican form of government. Once you get beyond a certain geographical limit or population limit, Madison is famous for having argued in the Federalist paper that Montesquieu was wrong and that you could have a so-called extended republic. In fact, he made the argument, he turned the Montesquieuian arguments on their head and said that an extended republic was actually better than a small state, because you'd have less likelihood of factional capture. But Madison was writing at a time when the entire population of the United States was about 4 million people. Now we've got 310 million people. We extend from the Pacific down into the Caribbean. And so I think the really serious question is whether we're just too big to make any sort of little r Republican or little d Democratic government really thinkable. So we just pray that what we've got will get us through the night.
Well, on that note, Professor Levinson, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you very, very much for having me.
The music is Intro by Manuzik, and, well, happy Constitution Day, everybody.